Broadcasting from deep within the second realm, you are listening to agoristradio.com.
Hello, this is Hero White of the Cypherpunk Show. Agoristradio.com is sponsored by MetroPie.net, SSH proxy and VPN services. Privacy is your right, only if you defend it. Please support our sponsors and tell others about them.
I know you're out there. I can feel you now. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of Cypherpunk. This is Hero White. Today we have a special guest, Clayton Douglas, and we're going to be talking about the Liberty Villages project. Clayton, are you there?
I am. How are you, Hero?
All right, doing good. Welcome to the show.
Turnabout fair play, I guess. I'm happy to be on your show. I enjoyed having you on mine.
Yeah, well, when I was on your show, we talked about agorism and online privacy and just a bunch of issues all around those. And one of the things you brought up was your Liberty Villages project, which was quite a fascinating little project. So if we could talk about that today, why don't you give the listeners a brief introduction to you and your show and some of the stuff that you're involved with, and then go ahead and give us a little short intro to what the Liberty Villages are, and we'll go from there.
All right. Well, I'm Clay Douglas. I'm known as the Free American. I've been doing the Free American magazine since 1994 when I started it. I started it after Waco because I was really outraged at what happened to the Christians community outside of Waco. They'd been there for 50 years, and then suddenly they were raided by the BATF. And I was not only upset with the BATF and the FBI for murdering 17 little children and almost 100 people, I was just as outraged at the press for failing to tell the whole story. All the press did is take the government handouts. We had to kill those 17 little children to save them from a child molester. And I was outraged at where's the sheriff? Where's the highway patrol? Where's the Texas Rangers? Why isn't anybody doing anything about this? Why are they letting this happen? And I don't know if we have the answers today, but I did two things. I started the militias in New Mexico and around the country, and promoted them around the country. And I started the Free American magazine and the Free American Hour on the radio. I've been doing that ever since. A few years back, I almost bought a town. I raised over $250,000 on shortwave to buy a town called Playas, New Mexico. Phelps Dodge was selling it. It was a mining town. But it was pretty complete. Had a pool, had a store and everything. And the government went in, and when they found out I was trying to buy it, they went out in and overbid me by about $3 million. Overbid me. And I didn't get it. They turned it into a anti-terrorist training camp for FEMA. But the response was so positive, somebody wanted to live in, a free American community. So I came up with the idea of Liberty Villages.
Great.
As the price of gas, food, and crime rises in the cities, I believe Liberty Villages should be rising up all over the country. And it's pretty simple. I've been reporting on what the New World Order was trying to pull. I've been reporting on communism for many years. I mean, I volunteered to go to Vietnam to fight communism. And then suddenly, after reading the Constitution and the Communist Manifesto, I found out every plank on the Communist Manifesto was intact in America today, from central bank, heavily progressive graduated income tax, to government control of communication, transportation, government ownership of factories and agriculture, and corporate farms. Right. Can you say Archer Daniels of Midland? Can you say Monsanto? And hero, we're being poisoned by not only the pharmaceutical industry, but by the GMO plants. Right. I mean, rats won't eat GMO modified corn. So how do we fight this? The banks and our founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson particularly, warned us, if you ever allow a private bank to issue your money, the banks and the corporations that spring up around them will leave your children homeless in the land that we conquered. And I think that's exactly what's happened. We've got over 1 million Americans out on the streets, kicked out of their homes. And as Bush was leaving office, he handed $2 trillion to the banksters because they were just too big to fail. And that amount of money would have paid off every mortgage of every American.
Yeah, there you go. And the money still would have went to the banks. But, I mean, it would have been through a paying off debt instead of, giving it to them directly.
Yeah, we gave the money to the owners of the Federal Reserve, the different member banks of the Federal Reserve. We gave the money to them, and they put the Americans out on the streets. Now, how do you combat that? How do you combat that? And I asked myself, how did we live 10,000 years ago? How did we live 2,000 years ago? And even less than 100 years ago, 40% of Americans lived and worked on family farms. Now, Richard Kelly Hoskins, he made the statement that the foundation of every civilization is the self-sufficient family farm. Okay. And we may not be able to change world politics. We may not be able to affect, our government going over and bombing Libya or bombing Iraq or bombing Afghanistan. But we can damn sure make a difference in this country on a local level, in our local communities, by rejecting the whole concept of communism and getting back to the self-sufficient family farm. Now, if I expanded this and came up with the idea for Liberty Villages. You got three documents on the wall of every restaurant and every office, and every Liberty Village would have a restaurant and a store. Mm-hmm. Three documents mm-hmm. on the wall, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution of the United States, and the Bill of Rights. So if you can grow your own food and you can produce and create your own energy, and we've got solar, we've got wind, and we've got the what God gave us, the wind and sun. If we can power ourselves with that, then we can and we can grow our own food. And if we're eating the right food, we'll stay healthy. Then what do we need the banks for? What do we need the government for? We become self-sufficient. Right. And by the way, that's the reason attacking Libya, because Libya was piping water out of the desert from the aquifers, becoming more self-sufficient. you know, in addition to the oil under the ground. But we've got more oil than Saudi Arabia right here in America. We're just not being allowed to use it and tap it. And the concept for Liberty Villages, grow your own food and provide a home for our veterans, because any time a communist regime takes over a country, they go after three classes of people almost in order. They go after the farmers first, and the farmers in America have been under attack for almost 100 years, ever since the Federal Reserve took over.
Mm-hmm. The New Deal. Yep.
Yes, yes. And that was the inner, hey, you know, we made McCarthyism a bad word because some of Roosevelt's best friends were communists. Yeah. And the communists are right here. Sometimes I wonder, he wrote, who actually won the Cold War? You know, the press tells us we won it. We destroyed communism. I think communism just moved to New York City.
Right. The state won. That's what won.
Yes.
So, you know, what I liked about the Liberty Villages setup that you have, and by the way, listeners, you can find information about this at libertyvillages.org. Quite a bit of information on the page. Is that it's these... So, Liberty Villages are not just information or setups where you have a group of people who are just doing their own homestead. There's many people doing homesteads. This is about a community. It's self-sufficient in ways far beyond just growing your own food. It appears you have plans and ideas in here about a self-contained legal system, self-defense, different types of, you know, using alternative currencies. So you're, you know, this is something that's a little bit different than people who are just pushing for self-sufficiency, because it's self-sufficiency in a whole realm of a whole community coming together and providing all of these services and as on the market level between individuals, all voluntary, and not some of the people that are against, that are very strong statists. They say, no, you need the government because who's going to provide this service or who's going to provide that service, you know, and some of the, you know, very strong socialist, communistic type countries, the people say that about water. And they say it about electricity and then telecommunications. And then as you go toward the more freer societies, you see that those services are actually provided by people. Now in the U.S., it's being provided more of almost a fascist form where the government may not be providing all the services, but all of these big corporations and the big networks of food distribution and communications, everything's integrated into a centralized system. And in here, these things are being provided by individuals in the community. One of the things I find interesting is that you have information on alternative housing. And I see these structures that are similar to what American Indians. Can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, originally my plan started out to be, I envisioned Liberty Villages as being a collection of cabins. Mm-hmm. And I found two companies that were building little park model trailers that looked just like a log cabin. And I thought that was pretty unique. And you know, what do you really need? Do you really need 2,000 square feet to live comfortably? You know, I live I've got a fifth wheel that I've been living in for a couple of years, and I love it. You know, everything's right here. The kitchen's right there. The bathroom's right there. The bed's right there. Garage is over there. You know, I love it. It's and I can pick it up and move it anywhere. Right. And the trailers, the park model trailers, those were movable too. But there's also, you know, that's just one aspect. I found a manufacturer and made a deal with a manufacturer that manufactures yurts and teepees. Now, how did we live? How did we live 1,000 years ago in this country? the Indians lived in teepees. And I kind of believe that when we came over here, we followed the wrong role model. We wanted to make America into a European, and it was a European colony, an right. English colony. So we built on the European model for a community, which I don't necessarily believe is the right one. Mm-hmm. The Indians had a little different way of life, a little bit more nomadic. You know, they could follow the buffalo herds, they could follow this, they could follow that. And I thought that was pretty good. I also have up on my site here, you know, that the Indian village Two Eagles was asked by a high-ranking government official, "You've observed a white man for 90 years. You've seen his wars, his technological advances. You've seen his progress and the damage he's done. Considering all these events, in your opinion, where did the white man go wrong? When white men find our land, Indians running it, no taxes, no debt, plenty of buffalo, plenty of beaver, clean water, women did all the work, medicine man free, Indians spend all day hunting and fishing, all night having sex." The chief leaned back and smiled. "Only the white man's dumb enough to think he can improve on a system like that." And the Indians that lived in these teepees for years. Now, the part of the promo that I did on the in my magazine, when I had it on the centerfold of my magazine, I said all of the charm of the 19th century and all of the convenience of the 21st. Now, you take one of those teepees, you wrap it in, you put some black tubing around the top of it, you put some solar panels around the top of it, and you put a windmill through the top of it, and you've got your power. You've got your internet. You got your you can access that through Wi-Fi systems. You can access that through satellite. And if you got a central unit here, and in that unit you're building solar panels and wind generators, you can make a wind generator out of some old alternators, a couple of 50-gallon barrels, cut them in half, put them on, weld them on an old axle, an old tire, an old from a junkyard, and you got a wind generator. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, we've got more sophisticated designs than that. But basically, you know, a guy in a little village in Africa set up something similar to that and started generating his own power. Why don't we do that? I mean, now Obama's idea of greening America is selling the top of that mountain to a foreign corporation, and then the foreign corporation goes in there, puts these big wind generators on there, runs that power down to the local power plant, sells it to them, and the power plant sells it back to you. To me, that's kind of stacking the deck.
Right.
Why not just you put up the your own teepee, put up your own wind generator, put up your own solar system, and not pay anything for it? God gave us that. Why not use that?
Right. Now, I'm looking at a couple of photos on the website here, and I see this, like, cabin that is kind of looks like a mix between a teepee and a cabin. Are these the units you're talking about?
Yeah, that's called a yurt. It's a Mongolian design.
Okay.
And they're very substantial, very warm. They've got them up in Taos, Red River, places like that. You know, you can park your trailer right beside a yurt. You know, no problem. And the yurts can come in big enough. In my design for the Liberty Villages, what we do, let's say you got a farm or a ranch. Now, keep in mind, you talk about being self-sufficient, and that's fine. That's fine. If everything's peaceful and you want to just be alone, you want to get out there and you want to pick up 5 acres out in the middle of nowhere and you put a teepee or a yurt or a cabin up and you want to live there, that's fine. But if things start going bad, like say they did when the communists took over South Africa, mm-hmm. what did they mm-hmm. do? What did they do? First thing they did, and as I told you in the beginning here, anytime a communist regime takes over, they go after three classes of people in order. The farmers first, the intelligentsia next, and the soldiers or police officers that are still loyal to the old regime. Mm-hmm. And that would be our veterans. That's happening right now. And if I want, we've got these groups out here demonizing the veterans, and more of my brothers died from suicide than died in Vietnam. So I think there's an attack on the farmers. I mean, on the soldiers, on our veterans. There's an attack. I see Liberty Villages with a yurt in the middle, a big yurt that houses a restaurant. I see renting out these teepees. We got these teepees that they can put up. And if you've got, say, 10 teepees there, somebody's driving along on a back country road, a back highway, and they see 10 teepees and a vacancy sign up, I think they'll stop. And if you've got the people there that are living there permanently and growing the food and running the restaurants and they're providing their own power because they're working together, and you open it up to veterans, hey, if you milk the goats, you feed the you weed the garden, and if anything bad happens across the country, if the trucks stop, if the people in the cities are starving to death, at least you've got combat-hardened veterans here to protect you. Mm-hmm. Now, what happened to South mm-hmm. Africa? They went and killed all the farmers. The blacks went in. They went in and murdered the farmers and their families.
Right. So you're talking about using veterans as a security, as personal security on these little village in these villages.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Fantastic.
And you know, it's you're providing a safe. And it's to me, the villages, you open it up, it ain't, we're not talking about a compound like they tried to label Waco.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about a little village open to the public. Come on in, and here's the Constitution, here's the Bill of Rights, and here, you know, you ate dinner here. We'll give you one of these citizen rule books so you'll understand what our country's supposed to be like, so you'll understand what communism really is, and you'll understand that this Liberty Village concept, I designed it to be 30 miles away from the nearest city, because the cities, to me, are your concentration camps. Your cities are the ghettos. This is where you want to put people because, why? You control them better there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your police state. I mean, do you feel a fuzzy, warm feeling if you look up in your rearview mirror and you see a cop car behind you?
Yeah.
That's not what it's supposed to be, folks. The police are supposed to be your servants, your protection, and they're not.
So you envision seeing thousands of these throughout the country, correct?
I think every old farm out there, every ranch, during the Depression, 40% of Americans lived and worked on farms. Now we got 2%. What we got is corporate farms, and if you're not, and if you got anything on there that's not genetically modified, if you got genetically modified food on there and you didn't buy it from Monsanto, then they can sue you and take your property away. It's a way to it's a method of control, and what they're feeding you ain't good for you. It just ain't good for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I see something, no GM foods, our Terminator seeds allows. I see range-fed cattle. I see organic chickens. And you know, good old homegrown tomatoes. Country boy will survive, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you've got, if you open up, we've got thousands of homeless veterans in this country. I think that is a national shame. I think that's a national shame. And I think if you put the teepees up for about $3,000, you can buy a teepee. You put it up on a Liberty Village. You buy another one next door to you, and you rent that one out to tourists, and you show the tourists that come from the cities what life is really supposed to be like. You know, the Bible tells us what to do about Mystery Babylon. Come out of her. And this is the way to do it, in my opinion.
Now, you had mentioned go ahead.
What?
Well,
go ahead.
You had mentioned before, I had talked about legal issues when it comes to putting up one of these communities and jurisdiction of a government, and when you have disputes and the like, and you talked to me about a particular number of families that you saw that would make up each of these communities and how they would interact with each other with disputes and what the agreements were.
Mm-hmm. One of the oldest forms of government was called the Ton. Mm-hmm. And that was 10 families or 10 men that got together to decide disputes. I mean, you make it 12, so we could say this could be the jury. And these 10 families or 10 men run the villages. They're in charge of it. And if it's good for you in your teepee or your yurt or your cabin, and you can build it, hey, you know, you got dirt there on the ground. You can make adobe out of it. There's two classes of people that live in adobe homes, the very rich and the very poor. You can build sod homes. You can build earth bag homes. I just did an interview with an old lady that she and her husband were building an earth bag home that was energy efficient, and they were doing it for under $5,000. The teepees you can get for about $3,000. The yurts are about $10,000, and one of the park monitor trailers is about $20,000. But that's a hell of a lot cheaper than paying $100,000 for a home and paying for that home three times over the next 30 years. Mm-hmm. You know, that's usury. And I believe we're going to grow chickens here, and you're going to grow cattle over there, and you're going to grow tomatoes over there. Well, if we trade, it's called a barter system, and it's been working for thousands of years. You know, it's there's not a problem. And if everything falls out in the city and these gangs and these crowds come out and they want to come steal, you know, kill you and steal your food and steal whatever you've got of value laying around, then if you're alone and you're self-sufficient, but you're alone, you got one man to protect one family on a farm a few dozen mm-hmm. marauders, the Liberty Village solves that problem.
Right.
But it also means you got to work together. You got to talk. And the alternative currencies, I'll give you a good example. Ithaca Hours. Ithaca mm-hmm. Hours. One little town. They started this, and everybody in town accepts Ithaca Hours. You know, it's based on you work for an hour, it's worth $10. So an Ithaca Hour is the equivalent to $10. You don't have to loan that money into existence. You don't have to pay interest on your own money, as we do in this country right now.
Yeah, the alternative currencies are becoming quite important, and there's a lot of development going into how they are set up and used, and many of them are using electronic systems of storage and exchange and settlement between individuals and communities and the like. Now, just to back up a little bit, you were starting to talk about the legal system. So you have these 10 families, and let's say there's some type of a dispute that happens between somebody that is part of the village. How does that work?
The 10 people get together, the 10 families get together, and they hear both sides of the story, and they make the decision. This is how you handle it. These would be basically covenant communities.
Right.
You got certain rules. You know, you don't hurt anybody else. You don't steal from anybody else. You know, and you become a productive part of the community. If you got money, fine, you put your money in, you build the teepees and yurts, and you can make a profit off of it. If homeless, if you're a veteran here, you got no money, but you got skills, then go to work for the community. Mm-hmm. Right. And if you get out of line, you got 10 people there to back it up, and you got the veterans there to enforce what you do. I mean, it's basically just starting a little township.
Yeah, it is very tribal. It's very, you can see these type of systems on a small scale throughout history and throughout the world before nation states and these modern systems would congregate around a strong central authority and declaring certain men as all powerful and then, you know, growing into these big monstrous states that we have now that control 300 million people from a city thousands of miles away, you know, down to the micro level.
That's right. You know, that's what you're describing here is basically communism. I mean, and you know, we pointed the finger. I keep wondering who really won the Cold War. You know, we're told that we won the Cold War, but I'm not sure that that's accurate.
Yeah, no, it was certain forms of socialism and fascism and communism against other ones, and even during World War II, I mean that was half a century after the central bank had taken over, and things were already sliding in a particular direction. It's just that it was easy for them to say, well, look at the comparative amount of freedoms and liberty and wealth and lifestyle of the West versus the, you know, the Satans, Stalin and Hitler and these guys, and demonize them, although they properly should be demonized for many of the things that they did, but demonize them in the sense of polarization, and that is they are evil and we are good. And then when they fell, everyone sits around and like you said, well, you know, we won the Cold War, we won all this, and then we turn around and realize that the you know, we're all in chains. So by a master of, by a different name.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you know, you got people you try to tell people that you know, you're a slave. They've refined the art of slavery to the point that the slaves don't know they're slaves.
Right.
I'm not a slave. Man, I can go out and get my pickup and go get a beer. Watch. I'm not a slave. It's called economic slavery. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they control the food, they control the water, then they control you. And you can get in the bread line there, and you can stand there and wait for a government handout. If we organize now and do these Liberty Villages now and get them set up all across the country, you got a farm, you got a ranch. Tell you what, how about if we get you the people so you don't have to hire the illegals? We'll get you the people that'll chip in and help you run your farm, operate your farm, raise your animals, and we'll have goats mowing the grass rather than. An illegal on a power mower. We'll work together, and each of these villages could actually compete with the other villages. You want Mexican food today? So let's go to the Mexican village.
Right.
You want an all white village? No problem. You got 10 friends that want to work with you and show what the white man can do. I would have Indians running a lot of these villages and you know, veterans working for them, you know.
Decentralized. So it's, you're not talking about a, like right now we focus in, most people focus within a city of several thousand to 10,000 and more people. And there's always this, well, who's going to run everything? And in these small villages, it's people coming together, private property, investment into their, if they have, like you said, if they have multiple properties there, teepees or the restaurant and all this stuff, there's going to be owners, there's going to be people that are working and they're pulling together. And if you don't like something that's happening there, or in your, you can go start your own community somewhere else. It's not that big of a deal. Or you can go join another one. And I see that as one or two of these is great. As you get three or four, 500 and larger, you start to these people are going to be in these communities. These communities are going to be aware of the other communities. So if one is growing, tends to have much more corn, when the bartering that's happening is not just internal to the community, the Liberty Villages themselves can start to network into this network of commerce and trade happening between them. So this division of labor
that's exactly the point, Hero. That's exactly the point. If we're working together, you got 10 people running here, and maybe there's 20 people that live there, but 10 people have got there first, and they're set up, and they're working together. They got a system working there. You know, you're composting, you're using solar, you're using wind. You're using the technology and you're using the computers to compete. But now, the Liberty Village concept, if it's linked, then what you have is a cooperative.
Right.
And you buy for the store there, you got a store, you got a restaurant, you buy your food wholesale, you buy your staples, your tobacco, your corn, your sugar, your coffee. You buy that wholesale, and then the members of this lodge here, of this village, would have access to that at cost plus 10%. Mm-hmm. And they network. You network the whole thing. We got the computers. We got the satellites. We can do that out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And you do this out in the middle of nowhere. If you got a farm or a ranch, let's say you got 100 acres. Can you work that 100 acres by yourself? Tough to do. Hard to do. And if you've got the farmers and ranchers, all they'd have to do is donate 5 acres, mm-hmm. and teach the people that are moving there to help them, teach them how to be self-sufficient, teach them the farming methods, teach them what we don't know, what we've forgotten over the years.
Right. You know, I see two areas of this that some people would look at this and say, well, you know, there's 300 million people in this country. 300 million people can't do this. Or this is not necessary now. You know, you can, like a lot of the agorist ideas and systems and ideas for networking and doing things, a lot of them are not necessarily just something for building an alternate society giving people an alternative in the first place, period, to what we're kind of shoved into right now. Is in the future, in the not too distant future, depending on how things go right now, this may not be just a good idea to get away from, to start moving into a more free society. This may be the way of survival, period. It may be the only option for survival. Because when you have governments coming in, setting price controls like the Soviet Union, it leads to famines. And this is historical because a centralized entity trying to micromanage through price controls and the like, they mess up everything that happens with who is growing what food, how it's being distributed, how the market actually works at the individual level. And you have famines. And not, this didn't happen 1,000 years ago, 500. Well, I mean, it did, but famines have happened just within the past 50 years. Within the past 100 years, there's been famines all over the world, very horrible ones. And usually they have been related. And specifically, you go over into the Soviet Union, specifically because of the tyranny of that communistic society. So as we move more toward that, you know, these systems are fantastic for moving into a more agorist society, but also it may be this is the only route for many people to survive. Now, some, there may be other systems out there, and there are other types of networks of people and communities and the like. But, you know, when you, like you mentioned the veterans, there's also, you can group lots of other groups of people throughout the country who are plugged into these cities. And when things start to go bad and there's martial law and food shortages and the rest of these things, you're looking at a pretty desperate situation. And it doesn't take long for desperate situations to happen. You know,
that's right.
How long does it take for Walmart to be emptied out? And we've already seen it. It only takes a few days.
I've got that right up on my website. I've been to Liberty Village. We got a film there up on the libertyvillage.org page about a empty store shelves coming to America. All it would take, a gas crisis, and trucks stop running, your grocery stores will be empty in a week. They've got less than a week. Everything's now done by on demand. You know, we only order as we need it. We do this on demand. We have stopped at one time across America, these grain elevators, they were required to keep them full. They were required to keep them full. That hadn't happened now. All the grain elevators are drained. They're shipping it off overseas. We're not taking care of the people.
Well, you know,
I want to address something.
Go ahead.
This whole plan for the Liberty Village, yeah, it'll work on a farm. It'll work on a ranch. It'll work 30 miles away from the nearest town. It'll work 100 miles away from the nearest town. If you're growing your own food, you don't have to worry about trucks delivering it.
Right. Yeah, that was my next point, is that once the store shelves are empty, it's not like it was a while ago where – then you have all your local producers in the community and within the state and the you know, replenishing the food. We're talking about store shelves are empty and then a breakdown in the entire food distribution ecosystem. And right now that includes stuff coming from China on boats, it getting into the ports and then distributed to the major sent off to the major food distribution centers like the regional Costco and Walmart distribution centers on trains and semis, and then from there going out, you know, it doesn't take much for a monkey wrench to be thrown into that system to completely shut it down. So, you know, looking at this is why we talked about this on another show. We have a website called the agoristcookbook.com, and on there, one of the first sections to have that has gone up on it, this is a wiki, so it's a work still in progress, is a gentleman who's running an agorist homestead. And it's not just this homestead where someone is just being self-sufficient in and of to themselves, but they're actually growing food products, animal products that are being produced, and products of the animals themselves, and vegetables and fruits and the whole shebang, and milk. And they're buying and selling these goods in the community. So it's this is a similar thing to the Liberty Villages, and they are actually seeing these agorist homestead communities of the type that you see on the Agorist Cookbook. The author has told me that he knows about 10 that I can think of right now that he's mentioned that are throughout the U.S. And they are actually sending – at this moment right now, there is a couple of individuals that have transportation units like semis and other trucks, and they are actually doing rounds throughout the country between these communities, exchanging goods between them. So there's already these type of networks happening up, and these agorist homesteads are not just individual. They're starting up with groups and putting up, even on their property, small, almost exactly like this Liberty Villages plan, where they're putting up small cabins for people to come in, and already they've put up several units, and as fast as they put them up, there are people moving from across the country with their families, people who have lost their jobs, their homes.
If we bought 10 teepees and put them up, you would have them rented out constantly.
Right.
Instantly, almost. Instantly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guarantee you, if somebody's driving by, they see an Indian village, what looks like an Indian village to them, and a vacancy sign hanging out there, they're going to stop just out of curiosity.
Yeah, and then you have a word of mouth. In these communities that I'm talking about here, many of the people that are coming are family, because they hear, okay, well, so-and-so's here, my brother is here, and they're doing this, and this is what's happening, and there's work, and there's food. You know, there's not necessarily in these places, this is not like, I'm moving to New York because I just, got a job as a stockbroker, and I'm going to make 200 grand. You know, it's not necessarily about seeking the big gold mine. People are looking at, okay, I'm either going to sit here and wait for my handout through some type of either future Social Security or unemployment or some other type of benefits that I can get right now that I may not have soon. Or to me, I don't want to live as just a little cog inside this big city just waiting for all of this stuff to hit the fan, and they hear from their family members, hey, this is what's going on, and those are the people who have been coming out and filling up these cabin vacancies. It's just been word of mouth of people in the family who have lost their jobs, this and that, and they have their kids, and they're like, you know what, let's go ahead and do this, and they're not choosing poverty or sustenance. They're thinking, you know, in the same spirit of 150 years ago, when people were over in New York and in the east of the U.S., and they're thinking, hey, you know what? Let's go. And they load up, a wagon and head out and to do their own homestead in this, environment, a pioneer type spirit. And that's what's happening with some of these agorist type communities and the homesteads, and now what can happen with the Liberty Villages. We're coming up on close to the end of the hour here. A couple little things I want to go over. Do you have information on this website? Are there any blueprints or other information where people can see what your ideas are over and above what we've talked about, and they see on the front page of your website?
I am still developing that. I am looking for the people with the land. I'm looking for the people that want to do this. And I haven't got that all together yet. They have tried to stop me. And I used to think it was because I was talking about 9/11. Now I believe that it's actually talking about the reason they came after me was because of this Liberty Village. Right after this, I mean, I was, they almost killed me. I was kept in a hospital for 4 months for 3 broken ribs after I came out with the Liberty Village plan. And I think they're afraid of this. I think that's why we got S-510, and why we had the National Animal Identification System. They want you to chip your chickens. Excuse me? What?
Yeah.
Right. You want me to chip my chickens? I don't think so. And it can be done in a city. I mean, this whole thing can be done in a city.
Mm-hmm.
It could be done in the you take a block of homes. And you get together, you talk to your neighbors and say, let's do a Liberty Village in this block, this one block. Mm-hmm. So what you do is, and Brad Pitt did this in New Orleans, put some wind generators on in a neighborhood there, and suddenly the power companies were paying the people, not the other way around. and you dig up that crabgrass you got in the backyard, and you plant your little vegetable garden. Right. They used to call them free gardens. So right there in that one block in Dallas, Texas, or actually, I believe in California, in Gardenia, someplace like that, a family did that, turned their whole backyard into a garden, and they were growing enough food in one house, in one yard, to feed and supply the local stores with organic vegetables.
Right.
So we can do this. Mm-hmm. We can do this. And the whole, again, the concept, the Liberty Village concept, I'm not looking to, you know, I mean, this could be turned into a franchisable turnkey business. You got 20 acres, you got 40 acres, you got 5 acres. We'll set you up a Liberty Village. We'll be the conduit.
Yeah, you know, I think that is very, very important right there, because my initial question was asking about the blueprint. And, you know, not that, you know, the idea behind this is, you know, get rich with Liberty Villages, but if you can put this together, and people can put this together as with the blueprint, with the ideas of how this works, come up with some type of a business plan also that can be used to possibly present this to farmers throughout the country who maybe they can't afford to even farm their land, but they have plenty of land that is available, or they're interested in these ideas, and see how can the land be an agreement, or like you said earlier about a land covenant being done with them for a certain amount of property, and as part of that, they have someone helping them with their farm, or there's food and products that are exchanged. But these ideas of how these things can be put together, and something besides someone saying, "Hey, this is a great idea," and think, "Okay, where do I find the place where I can get the teepees and this and that?" But a blueprint or a business plan type idea for doing this and getting it kickstarted. I think that's a really that can be very powerful, because it gives some people something to jump and run with. And I know that the other people that I've talked to that are starting up these other agorist homestead communities, they have already been involved with renting unfarmed land from other people, and sort of like a sharecropping, or I'm not sure the terms and those business models for just doing farming, and they're using those ideas and agreements and how that market works with those people to start talking to them and others with how to do this specific thing, where you get a chunk of land from these people who have it sitting there ready to go. It's not being used, and you know, it's not like you're having to deal with some large, very high priced real estate in a city. You're dealing with an alternate system with an alternate idea, with a market that's there. Because from what I hear, there's a lot of farmers out there with a lot of land right now that would be very interested in working something out with people. And that's at least the response.
I've got all of this research done. I've done all this. I've got the addresses. I know the names of the people that make the teepees, that make the yurts, that make the cabins, that build them. I know all that. And there are hundreds of people out there that are selling solar and promoting solar. Now, a lot of places will just come up and set them up for you. They'll set the solar up, and all that, then you can pay them. So it can be done a number of different ways. The one thing that I lack here, mm-hmm, is the money to do this. They tried to kill me back in 2004. I had one of my companies sold for about $500,000, and that was on Friday. But Monday when I came in, suddenly I was a racist, I was an anti-Semite, I was a low-life son of a bitch here. And they contacted every stockholder in a major, in a publicly traded corporation, to tell them what a bad person Clay Douglas was.
Yeah.
This is how much they fear this concept, I believe.
Yeah,
I believe. Maybe I'm just a bad guy and don't have the proper vision of myself, but I don't think so.
No, and these ideas, everything you're talking about, are much bigger than any type of limitation that you may have on being able to fund something like this. One idea in the famous and highly recommended book, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, there's many examples in the book, there were a couple of times when some guys had some fantastic ideas and they had no capital at all. And they, through brainstorming and networking and thinking about this and not just stopping at the fact that they couldn't do it, you know, people came together and these things multiplied and came to fruition. So I think that us talking about this on the show today, and you have your website, libertyvillages.org, and listeners can check out agoristcookbook.com, use that as a stimulation in your head for some of these things. You can contact Clayton. There's contact information at libertyvillages.org. And what's the other website that they can read more about you?
Go to freeamerican.com. Freeamerican.com.
Okay.
And if you go to freeamerican.com, you will be able to really see and hear all of the shows. I mean, I talk to people. I've got doctors that want to be able to shut up and do clinics here. Treat people naturally.
We didn't even talk about that. Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. If you're eating, remember, dead doctors don't lie. You know, the whole thing is wrong, and most of the diseases and cancer and everything else are caused because people aren't getting the proper nutrition. You know, you want to eat at McDonald's? Well, that's okay. They want you to die at 65. I my goal is to live to be 110 and break Social Security.
Okay. Clayton?
If you go to freeamerican.com, my phone numbers are on there. My phone number is 520-413-2397. I will work with anybody. I'll work with everybody. We can do this. This is doable right now with what you got. And if you don't want to move to the country, you got a job in the city, no problem. Let's turn your city into a Liberty Village. Let's turn your block into a Liberty Village.
Fantastic.
That's all.
Clayton, thank you very much for coming on the show. This was a lot of fun. It was interesting, and it's fantastic to hear from people that are working on agorist-type communities and ideas and moving away from centralization into self-sufficiency with their food, their commerce, their money, their communications, their power. And we really appreciate you coming on the show, and I'm sure that we're going to have you back.
All right, sir. Anytime. Thank you very much. God bless you.
Everybody, thank you very much for listening today, and look forward to several more guests throughout the week. You're listening to Cypherpunked.
Dodge this.
This is Hero White of the Cypherpunk Show. AgoristRadio.com is sponsored by MetroPipe.net, SSH proxy and VPN services. Privacy is your right, only if you defend it. Please support our sponsors and tell others about them.
Broadcasting from deep within the Second Realm, you are listening to AgoristRadio.com.